We are getting down to the wire for spots at Turning Point USA's Young Women's Leadership Summit. It is the biggest conference in the country for young conservative women. Here's the tea. The conference is from June 2nd to the 4th in Dallas, Texas, and we've got the biggest female conservative speakers in the movement, everyone from Kaylee McEnany to Candace Owens. Go to tpusa.com/YWS and use code POPOLITICS to get 25% off your tickets. You can come to YWS if you're still a student, or even if you haven't been a student for a long time, there are adult tickets available too. Only rule is you do have to be a woman, a biological one. Controversial these days, I know. For more information on the event, ticket packages, and what to expect, go to tpusa.com/YWS and use code POPOLITICS. I'm not going to lie to you. For pretty much my entire life, I have judged the crap out of women who want home births or natural births. Like, what kind of crunchy, hippy-dippy nonsense is going on there? You want to have a baby in your living room? No doctor floating around in your little baby juices in a little kiddie pool by the TV willy-nilly? I mean, nothing about that has ever appealed to me. Until the pandemic. That's when I saw hospitals telling pregnant women that they had to give birth completely alone. They had to wear masks as they were in labor, literally pushing a human being out of their petunia. The only alternative was to give birth at home if they wanted any say in their birthing process at all. And I saw more and more women on social media discussing their birth plans and saying that they were getting a doula and having a baby Little House on the Prairie style. At least, that's how I picture it in my head. Basically, I had been starting to warm up to the idea of home births, kind of. And then I met this guy at a pro-life conference this year. And so we were just talking, getting to know each other. And he was telling me and some other friends about how his wife's experience went giving birth a few months earlier. He started saying that his wife had a pain-free birth, I am quoting him, and that she was laughing at one point in the middle of pushing. And I was like, whoa. Okay, stop right there. What do you mean she had a pain-free birth? Like she had an amazing epidural? He goes, no drugs, nothing. She gave birth in one of those kiddie pools that I was just talking about. In their house, he said he was right there with her. It was amazing. And that she literally felt no labor pain, that the baby practically walked out. It was so easy and an amazing experience, he said, for both of them. So if you're like me, your jaw is probably on the floor, right? I think I asked this poor man 400 questions. And he told me that his wife learned everything from this woman on Instagram who teaches women to have pain-free birth. I went back to my hotel room and I started scrolling through this chick's Instagram for hours. I had never seen anything like it. And sure enough, there's videos on her page of home births where these women look like they're enjoying labor. How could this be? Is it actually possible to not feel any pain during birth? And if so, why haven't we been doing that the whole time? And what if something goes wrong in a home birth? Like, how safe is it? What even is a doula? And is it really necessary? We are going to answer all of these questions and more today with my guest, who not only is the woman behind the pain-free birth account on Instagram, but she's also a wife, mother, birthing e-course designer, and certified doula. Please welcome Karen Welton to The Spillover. Karen, you're a doula, so you deliver babies for a living. Let me tell you, that sounds just like one of the most incredible jobs out there. How long have you been helping moms deliver babies?
I've been doing it for 9 years, ever since my daughter was born. So it is the most fulfilling, exciting. I just love it. I totally love it.
I mean, your expertise, which is what really grabbed my attention at first, is based on this idea of pain-free birth. It's literally your Instagram handle. And I just want to get into what that even means, because, you know, labor is, I feel like, always portrayed as this super hard, super painful thing. You've got a screaming mom and doctors and the possibility of a C-section and all this. But your personal belief is that pain can be totally avoided during labor. So could you define what pain-free birth is to you? And does it mean that there is no pain involved at any point during birth?
That's a great question. And that's probably the top question I get, because most women obviously are pretty surprised. They're like, you must be crazy. That's not even possible. Birth is supposed to be painful. And that's honestly the narrative we've been fed, especially if we grew up in this Western culture of fear And we've been taught to believe throughout experiences, and whether it's your theology, your, you know, or what you, your friends and family have experienced, or what you've seen in movies. Like, we always see movies portrayed as like scary and dramatic, just like you talked about. But when we really look at birth as a physiological process, as something our bodies were designed to do, if we look at every other physiological process that the body does naturally without interference, it's designed to do it without pain. So when we talk about digestion, breathing, blinking, all of these things that our body is designed to do without interference, it's capable of doing so without pain. Now, does that mean there's no discomfort? Does that mean it's not intense? No. I chose the name pain-free birth, not because I think every birth should be 100% pain-free. In most cases, there's discomfort, there is intensity, there may be contractions that are so strong, they're painful. Even in my labors, I've experienced that. But throughout the majority of the labor, it's absolutely possible to have contractions, to have birth, to push the baby out without pain. And when I say pain, I don't mean you're not feeling anything. I don't mean it's like an epidural and you're like numb and you can't feel the sensation at all and you're disconnected from your body. What I mean is that you're not experiencing pain in the sense of when I say pain, it's a signal your body sends, that your brain sends you. It says there's something wrong. You're in danger. It's the fight or flight, right? You have to stop what you're doing. If you touch the stove and it's hot, pull your hand away. If you get bit by a dog, protect yourself. If you cut yourself, you know, Band-Aid. That's pain. That's acute pain. But when we talk about birth, pain exists in birth for most women, especially, you know, delivering in hospitals that have been taught to expect pain. And we do expect it. And what causes it is something entirely different. And so that's when I talk about the possibility of a pain-free birth, I'm saying that when you experience a contraction, you are feeling everything. It is not that you don't feel it. You're feeling the intense tugging and pulling and stretching, and literally your muscles of the uterus contracting and pulling up or pushing baby down. And in many cases, women describe it as like early labor as period cramps. So it's a similar, yeah, and even women experience period cramps in different ways. Some have very painful periods, some don't, just like birth. But in birth, in labor, we can actually facilitate that process happening physiologically by staying relaxed and open. And so pain in labor sends the message to your body that something is being strained. Mm-hmm. There's something in this process that is strained, or you're fighting it. You have tension in your body. So it's actually a message to relax. It's actually a message to open up and surrender. It doesn't mean this is how it is. You have to suffer through it, grin and bear it, brace yourself, get through it. And that's how most women interpret it, which actually causes more pain.
Well, so walk me through, I mean, how you even figured out that having a pain-free birth was possible. I mean, did someone tell you about it, or did you just experience it yourself?
So when I got pregnant 10 years ago with my first baby, I was 27, and I believed that I just had this, I had the same fear that most other moms do. Like, I've been told it's painful. I don't know if I can do it. I was honestly scared, just like most other women. But there was something in me that said, it has to be better than what I've been told. And I believed my God created my body in his image, and he's a good father. So logically, I just thought, why would I have to experience pain in childbirth if he created my body and we're no longer under the fall, under the curse, like we're redeemed, we're new creations. So regardless, no matter what you believe religiously or theologically, our bodies have been like perfected, either designed by an intelligent creator or through millions of years of evolution, your body is designed to birth. And I thought, it's got to work better than what I've been told. So at first it was just a curiosity. And then I got my hands on some books and some materials like Supernatural Childbirth, or Ina May's Guide to Childbirth, some older books that really showed the beauty and the physiology of natural birth. And I started to shift my mindset, and shifting out of fear and into faith and confidence. And then I got excited. So throughout my pregnancy, I changed my mindset and started filling my heart with positive birth stories. And then, of course, you have like when birth actually hits. And I'm like, I have all these ideas and all this faith and all this, you know, idea of what birth should be, but I don't really know. Like, it could hit me like a truck and it's all a lie, right? So there was still this like thing in the back of my head that's like, we'll see, we'll see. And labor comes. And at the very beginning, it was painful. And I was like, this is not what I learned. This is not what I'm believing in. Like, what's the deal here? I had this whole conversation with God and I heard very strongly in my spirit, embrace it. And I was like, that's crazy. I don't want to embrace it. It hurts. Like, I physically early labor here. I'm thinking if this is early labor, I don't know what active labor pushing is going to be. And I thought, okay, fine, I'll try anything. So the next contraction came. I'm just lying in bed, first birth, first time mom, don't know what I'm doing. And I embraced the contraction. It was like the energy swelled and I absorbed the energy into my body. And so women who describe a contraction, it's like it builds slowly. It's this tightening, this pulling, it peaks, and then it kind of fades away. And as it was peaking, instead of getting tight and bracing for it, I relaxed and opened and I welcomed it in as if it was good, versus what I did before was bracing myself because I thought it was bad and it was going to hurt me, which caused more pain. So the moment I absorbed it and embraced it, it took a lot of mental energy and focus, but it didn't hurt in the sense that I wouldn't say it was painful. It was intense. It was strong. It pulled. I felt the sensation, but it didn't cause me pain or anguish like the contractions had previously. So I thought, okay, it worked that time. Let's see if it works the next time and the next and the next. And none of the other contractions in that labor were painful unless I let fear in and tension in my body, or I thought, I can't do this. And so I was able to catch myself, and it basically became muscle memory to that my body was able to contract and open and dilate, and I could feel everything. And I had to stay totally limp and relaxed, working with my body and embracing the contraction every time. And so I experienced a birth. And at the end, I experienced the birth high and the incredible euphoria that that brought me. It was a water birth, a home birth. I had midwives there. We were laughing. We were crying. Like, it was everything I dreamed it was.
Wow.
And after that experience, it like lit this fire in me. Cause I thought to myself, man, women are being lied to. And I'm getting all emotional because it's like, it's really what I live for. It's my passion, because I thought women are being lied to all over the world. They're being told birth is painful, birth is traumatic, and it is for many women. I don't discount that and I don't invalidate that at all, but it doesn't have to be. And they're told your body's broken. You need assistance. We need to coach you and tell you how to push. We need to, you know, we need to give you extra drugs or Pitocin or whatever, fill in the blank. We have to manage your labor because you're not enough. You know, that's what women hear. In motherhood, in pregnancy, in postpartum, you're not enough. Your body's broken. And I started pain-free birth because I wanted to show women what was possible and that their bodies weren't broken, that they were divinely capable of birthing their baby, and that it didn't have to be traumatic or painful. It could be even ecstatic, especially when you research the hormones and everything that really is designed to happen. Your body's working for you and your baby's working with you. And when we partner with that, it's a transformational spiritual experience. And so I really just wanted to enlighten and bring this awareness of the possibility of what birth could be to women, so that we could dismantle the fear in our culture surrounding birth and equip women with confidence and faith to really believe that they're capable of birth.
So incredible, everything that you've done. And I am like a huge fan, because that's kind of what I did with starting my daily show, Poplitics, is just kind of having this idea, something needs to change, and then just doing it. And that's kind of what you did with the whole pain-free birth movement, which I think is so admirable. And the biggest thing that was just confusing to me when I heard about it is because, and you kind of mentioned this, the fall and all of this, like from a theological standpoint, because I know even with non-Christians, I mean, we're all familiar with the story of Adam and Eve. In Genesis 3:16, God tells Eve, right, that like you're cursed forever, your childbearing is always going to be painful, essentially. And so that's why I want to ask you, I mean, how do you justify that women can experience a pain-free birth? Because I thought that it was like God's will that we were cursed with that because of what Eve had done.
Totally. I get that question all the time, especially from Christians, and understandably so, because if we think, oh, we're going to believe for this, but that's not what the Bible says, it's not in congruency. So when we look at those scriptures, especially in Genesis, where it talks about, you know, God cursing Adam and Eve, he doesn't actually curse Eve's body. He doesn't curse Eve. He curses the ground, and he curses, but he doesn't, it doesn't even say in that verse, you know, cursed is Eve, cursed is birth. It says you'll experience pain in childbearing. And when we look closely at that word, the original word is atzab, which is like toil or sorrow or hard work. And it can be translated pain, but it's the only instance in the whole Bible that it's translated pain when it's referring to Eve and childbirth. When you look at it in every other context, it's translated sorrow, grief, toil. In the same way that it's used when God says, I'm cursing the ground, you'll have to work and toil the ground. So he says to Adam, you're going to work and toil. So really what we're seeing there is the environment, the whole context of their world changed. Sin came in, entered the garden, and now they have to work hard. They have to work and labor in childbearing, work and labor to toil the ground. And we see that in our world today. We still live in a fallen world. We live in a world where there's sin and evil and horrible things happen. But then we also see Jesus came to redeem, to break off every curse. He says, I've borne your pain and your sorrows and your sickness. I took stripes for your healing. So logically, why would God take away our pain or provide at least a way to remove pain in every other situation in our life, but not in childbirth? Like, okay, I'll heal your body. I'll heal your sickness. I'll heal your grief. I'll redeem you from every curse, except not childbirth. Women, you still have to suffer there. Like, right. Doesn't make sense. So
you're saying there's not a caveat there.
Yes, yes. But even if you're not a Christian or believer, you can still look at those original verses and say, okay, God never actually cursed Eve's body. So that means I can step into the fulfillment, into the original creation, like her original body. Our original bodies are still good. We're created in God's image. He didn't put like a curse on us that says you have to have pain and birth, even though that's the way we translate it. And there's bias there because they translate it, okay, for the woman, it's pain, for the man, it's hard work, right?
Right.
But even if we said, okay, let's even the playing field, maybe it's hard work for both. Yeah, birth is hard work. Birth is sometimes grief, takes grief, takes sorrow, takes toil, takes so much energy out of you. And most women I know are not afraid of that kind of hard work. In fact, they want this. When we think it doesn't, when we realize it doesn't have to be painful and suffering, we embrace this transformation. And I think that's what we have to remember, is that the woman's body is not cursed, and we have to break off that mentality. And we're even taught that in culture, like our bodies are cursed because we're women. We have to suffer with a period. We have to bleed. We're weaker, right? And we get these ideas in our head that make us believe that it's something to suffer. Like being a woman means you have to suffer. And I just don't buy it. I know it's true. And in so many cultures, it's true, but that's what I'm working to dismantle, is that you're not the weaker person. You're not broken. You're not, you know, your body is not a failure when you're actually incredibly strong. Like when you look at how strong women are and what they're capable of and the amount of pressure and energy happening in our bodies and labor, it's incredibly empowering when we remove fear from the conversation, from the mentality. So, yeah.
What is it that hospitals are telling women to do specifically during labor that causes unnecessary pain?
That's a great question. And hospitals, generally speaking, don't support physiological birth. They manage birth. And in many cases, there's many women that have to be in a hospital, and I don't judge or discriminate from anyone who says, I want to birth at home, I want to birth in the hospital, I want to birth in a birth center, I want to birth in the woods by a stream with birds chirping. I don't care where you want to birth. I think you should birth where you feel most safe, because your body is going to work best there. But it's true, if we simply look at hospitals, it is not conducive to physiological birth. And what I mean by physiological birth is the way your body is designed to naturally labor. So if you think about an animal in the wild, any animal or mammal in the wild in labor needs certain things for that birth to go smoothly. So they need a quiet space. They need usually dark lighting. And what you'll often see is that mammals, when labor begins, they instinctually retreat and they find a quiet, dark place that's not disturbed. And then they go into labor there. And if you do disturb a mammal in labor, it often disrupts their labor pattern or it stalls entirely because they know I'm not safe. And farmers know this, humans, we know this, don't disturb animals in labor, don't intervene. And yet we don't realize that humans are mammals too. We have the same basic physiological needs. And so when we're put into an environment where there's high stress, monitoring, management, bright lights, loud noises, constant interruptions and disturbances, everything about that environment puts our defenses on alert. Our brain tells our body, oh, it's not safe here. It's the fight or flight. And that fight or flight sympathetic nervous system response is actually what creates the tension in the body. So the hormones of adrenaline and cortisol cause tension, and that tension is what causes pain. And so what we'll see often in hospitals is that labor is more painful, or it takes longer, or it stalls entirely, because women are having to contend with these disturbances and an environment that doesn't support their innate physiology.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing is too, just talking about, you know, stereotypes when it comes to giving birth. We live in a time, you know, when medicine is the best it's ever been, but I think that it can almost be used as an excuse against women who want to experience a natural birth. And correct me if I'm wrong, Karen, but I also think that we run the risk of glorifying hospitals to the point where we put a hospital's way of doing things kind of over a mother's intuition. So I want you to address some of the misconceptions or myths about all natural or home births.
Yeah, and that's a really good question, because there's a lot of contention between these camps. Like, oh, well, if you birth at home, you're putting your baby in danger, or you're selfish, you know, or if you go to the hospital, well, you don't trust your body and you're a failure or something. And
right. They say that there's a greater risk of death if you have a home birth versus a hospital birth.
Yeah. And there's lots of different studies on that. Some of the largest studies, like if you look at the one in the Lancet published in Australia, they looked at, it was over like, I think it was 750,000 births. And they found that there's no increased risk to mom or baby delivering for a low risk mom delivering at home. Now, if you have things that make you high risk, the hospital may be a better choice for you. Absolutely. And again, I'm not here to judge. We have to look at risk versus risk. I think that's the misunderstanding that we're raised with, is that we think hospital equals safe, home or, you know, alternative equals dangerous or risky. When in reality, in a home birth, a midwife comes with myriad of supplies, you know, Pitocin to stop bleeding, fetal resuscitation kit to help the baby breathe if they need help, or assistance breathing, all, you know, iodine to do stitching, all kinds of stuff. You just don't have the operating room for cesarean or epidural pain medicine. And so if you need that, you can transfer. And so, and actually that's how we see birth handled in many ways in other countries, like in Europe, like in England. They have a lot of home births and midwifery care is the standard.
Why do you think that in England it's a standard to have birth at home, but not in America? Is it just like a money-making thing?
I wouldn't say it's a standard to have birth at home. It's still the minority. You see about 2%, 1-2% of births in America delivering, mothers delivering at home. I'm not sure exactly what the stats are in England. And we both have issues with our maternity care systems not supporting physiology. So I don't mean to paint Europe as like this glorious, you know, they have problems there too. We have it everywhere. It's really the need to manage women. I think that's what it comes down to. When you have doctors going to medical school and getting trained, and I am so grateful that we have doctors who are there in case of emergencies. And we do need them. We need cesareans. They make birth safer. But about what 5% or so of women truly need a medical emergency or cesarean. And that's kind of what you see, like the World Health Organization says your cesarean rate really shouldn't be above 10%.
And what are we at?
Healthy birth outcomes. Now, if you're in like an impoverished country, like African countries or, you know, third world countries, having safe obstetric care makes birth safer, right? Because there are complications and things that happen. Again, we live in a fallen world. Birth is not perfect. Birth is not predictable. And so we want that option for women who need it, or for any woman even delivered at home, to be able to utilize safe obstetric care or transfer in the sense of an emergency. And in England, they basically just work better together. So you have home birth midwives working with physicians, working with OBs, working with high risk, you know, fetal maternal specialists, and there's more of a cohesiveness and a smooth transfer. Whereas in the US, it's like you're either home birth or you're hospital, and you better make your choice and you better stick to it. And if you transfer, well, you failed. Your home birth failed. No, a transfer from home to hospital is not a failure. It's an appropriate use of resources. And I think that's where we have to understand the role that we want. If I'm a low risk mom and I want a physiological birth in a safe place in my home or, you know, birth center or somewhere, hiring a midwife who's experienced and an expert in physiological birth is a good option, and using obstetrics if you need it in the sense of an emergency or if a high risk situation comes up when you need, you know, that expert or maternal fetal medicine specialist. Again, we have all these professions, is a good idea, but you don't need a high risk expert specialist like an obstetrician that's a trained surgeon to manage a low risk pregnancy. And what we see in those situations is often higher rates of interventions. We have a 33% cesarean rate in our country, which is much higher than it needs to be.
Why is it higher than it needs to be? Like, are women getting C-sections that don't need them?
Yes. And if you look up, you know, there's doctors like Neil Shah who speak a lot about that about half of them are unnecessary. And it's because, as I talked about, the hospital system is not designed to support physiological birth. So you take a low-risk mom who had no complications, no problems in her pregnancy, and you see this time and time again. They go into the hospital, and we see the cascade of interventions where her physiological process is being disrupted internally. There's interventions, there's interruptions, there's, oh, well, your labor's taking a long time. We'll have to give you Pitocin to speed it up. And now those contractions are really strong and really hard and really painful. So we need an epidural for the pain. And oh, now that epidural is causing labor to slow down and baby's heart rate is concerning and that's getting too slow. We're seeing decelerations. So we better give you more Pitocin. We got to get that baby out sooner. So more Pitocin. Oh, now we're seeing more decelerations. And it's this game of like cat and mouse, how do we prescribe these drugs so that baby can tolerate them? So you're having a birth where you're trying to make baby tolerate it. Mm. And one way or the other, either you have a vaginal delivery that's medicated and lots of interventions, women often feel disempowered. Not everyone. Again, if you want the epidural, get it. I'm not here to judge. But, or you have a cesarean because either fetal distress or failure to progress, meaning your labor stalled.
Is both a baby being in breech? I've never given birth. Just throwing that out there. Is a baby being in breech a reason for a C-section?
It often is talked about in that way.
I see your page, you always are like showing these women that have babies in breech that are giving birth at home. So for women that have had a baby in breech but have given birth in a hospital, explain how do you give birth then without a C-section at home if your baby's in breech?
So breech babies is not a reason. It doesn't mean an automatic cesarean like we're taught. And even the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology says breech vaginal delivery is a reasonable, safe option for low-risk women to consider. The problem is doctors are not giving women informed consent when they have a breech baby. And they're saying, okay, if you don't deliver, your baby's going to have head entrapment or all these complications. And they put a lot of fear into women. And that fear tells their body, clamp down, get tight. And if we look at the study, it goes back to the breech term trial, and that's when it showed the perspective in America swayed from breech is a reasonable, safe option to have a vaginal delivery to now we have to have every breech delivered by cesarean because it's dangerous and risky. But when you look at more updated, larger trials on breech deliveries, when you have a skilled practitioner who's experienced in breech or breech extraction and they know what to look for in a hands-off physiological breech delivery, the risks are very low. There are some higher risks of certain things happening, but there are also risks to cesarean. And that's, I think, what we don't talk about, that there's a lot of risks to having repeat cesareans, especially. So if you have a breech baby and you want more kids, you should definitely have that conversation with your doctor and understand the actual risks of delivering breech versus having a cesarean, which may mean you need a repeat cesarean, or now you need to do a V, or, you know, have a VBAC. All of this you're looking at risk versus risk. It's not one is risky, one is dangerous. Are there risks to breech delivery? Absolutely. And there are risks to vaginal birth, and there are risks to cesarean delivery, and there are risks to repeat cesareans. And those risks of repeat cesareans increase with each subsequent cesarean. And they can actually be greater than a breech delivery after you've had two or three cesareans. So we have to look at all the information and not just make a snap judgment and say, breech is dangerous. Now, is it 100% safe? No.
Right.
Life is 100% safe. And that's some true. Breech positions are more dangerous than others, right?
So but one
generally
thing you-
speaking,
right.
It's normal.
One thing that you talk about too is that even sometimes the positions that women are told to give birth in a hospital can increase pain during labor. Could you expand on that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're seeing, and I'll just mention too, like breech is a variation of normal, just like a lot of things in labor, like having a long labor is a variation of normal. Having a short labor, delivering babies that are big is a variation of normal. It doesn't mean you have to get a cesarean. And that's so often what women are told. And it reinforces this belief that your body doesn't know what to do. If there's even the slightest variation of normal of what we like to see in our little box, we're going to recommend induction or cesarean. And then we, of course, see these higher intervention rates. And in the hospital, it doesn't help. Like you said, that women are told to lay on their back and push, which is probably the worst position physiologically to deliver in.
Why is that?
Well, you're sitting on baby's head, right? So your tailbone is restricted and your tailbone is designed to expand in labor.
Ooh.
The woman's pelvis is round and flexible and all those joints move. They're designed to open and flex. And we see lots of movement in the maternal pelvis. In fact, it can expand up to 30% in labor, especially in certain positions that are upright, or like a lunge position expands the pelvis up to 30%. Lying on your back, though, restricts your tailbone from expanding. So your baby's head's coming down, hitting the tailbone or the bottom of the bed.
Ow.
And then you have to push up to get that baby's head out. So you're fighting against gravity because the pelvis, the birth canal is not like a straight shot. Baby has to rotate and really maneuver to get out. And so sitting on your back restricts motion. It will cause more pain and you have to use a lot more energy to push in order to get baby around that pubic bone and then pushing literally uphill to get baby out.
But if a doctor knows that, why do they have women lie on their back then to give birth?
Because it's convenient for them. That's how they were taught. That's how they've seen birth done. That's how they've always done it. In fact, it goes back to like a king, I think it was King Louis the 14th. I could be wrong about that, who said back in the day, I want to see women, my mistresses give birth. He was curious about this. And people kind of say, this is a little creepy, but he made at the time royalty and everyone birthed in upright positions, which is physiological and instinctual. And then he told his mistress to give birth on her back so he could see the birth. And so then it kind of spread that, oh, well, if royalty births this way, we should do it too.
Oh,
so some people say that's how it started. I don't know if that's true, but it's more convenient for the doctor nowadays because they can see everything. And it's kind of like that saying, like, this is how we've always done it. This is how we're going to do it. And to see a woman in hands and knees or an upright position where they have to maybe get down low on their hands and knees to see, or, you know, see it in a different angle, even though it may not be any more inconvenient. Like I tell women, if your doctor says, hey, get in bed, it's time to push. First of all, you can get birth in whatever position you want. You don't have to do anything if it doesn't feel right to you. But if you want to, you can get in bed on your hands and knees. And the doctor can deliver, your midwife or whoever can deliver that baby and have full view, full access. And it's no more restrictive than laying on your back.
Wow. Well,
some women may want to lay on their back. If they've had a long, exhausting labor, it might feel good. If that's the case, I recommend turning on your side so that your tailbone still has that freedom of mobility and it's not restricting baby's movement. And then you can kind of hold the leg up. But I do recommend like knees in, feet out, because
okay.
That's going to open the pelvic outlet. Instead of cranking your in a hospital, what they're going to tell you to do is to hold your knees all the way up to your ears, hold on really tight so you're like spread eagle, and hold your breath, count to 10, and push, 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 push. Everything about that is wrong. It causes so much tension, increases the likelihood of tearing, and it actually closes the pelvic outlet when your knees are spread really far and really wide. But if your knees are in, it opens the outlet. Your pelvis is kind of on a hinge like this.
You're blowing minds. You're blowing minds, Karen. When I was growing up, we rarely went out to eat because my mom has always loved to cook. Every morning, she woke up before we went to school to make us a homemade breakfast. And every day when we got home, there was usually some form of cake or cookies waiting for us. And we ate dinner as a family at the table every night. If your mom loves to cook too, and you completely forgot to get her a Mother's Day present, don't worry, I will not rat you out. I'm going to help you. You cannot go wrong with a box of meat from Moink. That's Moo plus Oink. Moink Farmers Farm, like our grandparents did. And as a result, Moink meat tastes like it should because the family farm does it better. You choose the meat delivered in every box, and there's everything from ribeyes and chicken breast to bacon, lamb, and salmon. I love meat from Moink, and I know you will too. Keep America farming by signing up at moinkbox.com/spillover right now and surprise your mom for Mother's Day, and maybe she'll let you have a taste. A huge bonus is that conservatives who sign up at moinkbox.com/spillover right now will get free filet mignon for a year. That's 1 year of the best melt-in-your-mouth steak you've ever had, but only for a limited time. That's moinkbox.com/spillover. That's moinkbox.com/spillover. So if a woman is pregnant with twins or multiples, is she somebody that definitely should not have a home birth, or is that also just totally wrong?
I think you need a skilled practitioner. That's kind of what I advocate for. In some cases, it may be that if a woman really feels safer at home, her body is going to have a safer birth. Again, it's that fight or flight. Now, I share lots of stories of women having twins at home, and some women might get freaked out by that. And I think I probably even would have been freaked out by that a year or two ago. But the more and more I learn and I understand what's really happening, there are amazing. Shout out to Dr. Stuart Fishbein, does home births for twins and breech babies in Southern California, and he's normalizing breech and twin deliveries. Now, in most cases, it's not legal, or I should say it's not legal for a midwife to do a twin or breech home birth at home. So you may not even have that option unless you choose to birth unassisted. I recommend getting a skilled practitioner who's experienced with twins, who's experienced with breech deliveries or breech extraction, who knows what they're doing, who you also feel safe and comfortable with and you trust. Because really that's going to, your provider is going to determine your birth outcome more than any other factor in your birth. Whether you're at home or in a hospital, your relationship with that provider and how much you trust them and how they treat you and how they care for you and whether they bring in fear and anxiety into your birth space or whether they bring in trust and care and love is going to really be the biggest factor in determining what kind of birth you have.
So for a woman who does go into labor with this goal of having a pain-free birth, but she doesn't achieve it, what most likely would have prevented that pain-free experience?
So I think we have to first get out of the mentality that we're blaming ourselves. First of all, having pain does not mean you failed. Having a painful labor or a hard labor or a long labor doesn't mean you did something wrong. Now, can we prevent or minimize pain? Absolutely. And sometimes we can't. So we have to look at all the factors of what causes pain. Certainly mindset is a big factor. And when we look at how are we responding to labor, how is our body physiologically responding to every contraction? What's going through your head? Are you saying, I can't do this? Ow, this hurts. Make it stop. How long is this going to take? Negative thought patterns? Or are you embracing it, going, ooh, relaxing your jaw, relaxing your face, welcoming the energy in? That's going to determine how every contraction feels. We've also got the baby position, and the baby position in a big way affects how you experience those contractions. So a posterior baby or baby that's kind of flipped, turned facing the front, where their head is facing the back of the head is facing the mother's spine, can cause a lot of back labor. If you've got an asynclitic baby, if you've got a tight pelvic floor, you know, there's lots of, without going like crazy, there's lots of other factors. It's not only mindset. And we have to remember that. We have to remember environment plays a big role. Who's supporting you on your support team plays a big role in how you experience labor. But we have, it all comes back to, in many ways, the fear, tension, pain cycle. And if we can be deeply aware of our body, which is hard for a lot of women, I think, because we're taught to disassociate from our body. But if we become deeply aware of our body and connected to ourselves, we can become aware when pain enters and we can say, huh, let's get curious about this. Where is there tension in my body? Where is fear coming in to my mind? What am I thinking about that's causing fear and anxiety? Because that fear leads to tension in the body. Tension causes pain when contractions come. And then that pain leads to more fear because now we're scared because it's painful, right? And then more fear leads to more tension, leads to more pain. And it's this downward spiral. So what I teach women in my e-course is, how do we reverse that downward cycle? How do we arrest it and reframe our mind to, okay, this is painful. Let's get curious. Instead of beating yourself up, you know, or blaming yourself for something that went wrong. And many times we can't control birth. If your labor is 30 hours or 3 hours, there's a lot of things about birth we can't control, but we can control how we respond to contractions, how we respond to the sensations of birth and the mindset we have going in, which is going to allow your body to open or close. And we kind of have that opportunity with every contraction. Am I going to open and embrace and surrender? Or am I going to close and get tense and control? And I think instinct, like many of us, want to control. And so breaking that habit is a big part of learning how to facilitate a pain-free birth or birth with less pain.
What are all the benefits of having a home birth that women, you know, experience? So you're giving birth at home, and then like these are all the amazing things that women love about giving birth at home.
So yeah, I did have a home birth with my first. I switched at near the end of my pregnancy. Actually, I was going to do a hospital birth. And then I said, you know, I just don't feel like that's...
Wait, you can do this? I thought that if you like had a hospital picked and stuff, that you were stuck. Like, because I had one of my best friends, she wanted to switch and do a home birth. And then she was like, well, I already picked my hospital and have it all set up and everything. I can't get out of it.
No. That is such a mental block. And I tell them all the time, you can switch anytime. You can take 40 weeks and switch. If you find a midwife willing to take you, even if you don't, like there's always options.
Oh,
you can fire your doctor in labor if he is not serving your well-being, if he's or controlling or what, any situation you have the rights of body autonomy and informed consent. And at any time you can fire your doctor or nurse and say, you know what, this is not serving me. I don't feel safe in your care. I don't feel comfortable. I would like to request a new doctor. And they have hospitalists on call in any hospital that will come. You might not get to choose your ideal provider, but if you're feeling unsafe, that's really going to disrupt your labor pattern. If there's tension in that room with the doctor, or you feel like there's obstetric violence taking place, or you feel controlled or abused in any way, get out of there or kick out that doctor. Go, or you can go to the nurse manager and say, I want to request a new nurse. This nurse is not a good fit for us. And they would rather assign you a new nurse or a new doctor than have to deal with complaints later on. So it's in everybody's best interest to find the right fit. And if you're in pregnancy and you're seeing warning signs, you're feeling red flags with your doctor's office, and they're saying things like, oh yeah, I support natural birth, but you know, we'll probably want to induce you at 39 weeks, or, you know, for no real medical reason. There's a lot of, you know, we can get into that. I always tell women, if you don't feel comfortable, 100% comfortable, 100% supported in your desired birth, you need to switch, because there is always going to be a better provider out there. There's going to be a provider for you, and you deserve it. Your baby deserves it. Don't ever birth with someone you don't feel comfortable or safe with. It's like sex. If you're having sex and you don't feel safe, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Birth is the same. It's the same hormonal blueprint where oxytocin is designed to peak and go high. And that blocks pain receptors and opens and dilates you. And if you don't feel safe, your body will stop producing oxytocin and you won't dilate.
Wow.
Your labor will stall, just like a deer in the wild that senses a predator coming close. Their body goes into fight or flight. Labor shuts down. All the muscle, you stop getting blood flowing to your uterus and those organs. And instead it goes to your large muscle groups so you can fight or flight, or freeze and run to safety. Same is true in a hospital or with a provider. It could be in a home birth too. If you have a provider that you don't feel comfortable with, your brain goes into fight or flight. It stop digestion and labor and those processes that aren't essential stop in order to flood your large muscle groups with blood and oxygen so that you can run away. And until you're in a safe environment, oftentimes that labor won't really pick back up again. And I think that's really truly when we see this in high diagnoses of failure to progress, which is the number one reason for cesareans in this country. A lot of that is simply the fight or flight mechanism. So if that was you and you had failure to progress that ended in a cesarean, don't beat yourself up, because more often than not, your body didn't fail you. It was actually doing exactly what it was designed to do and what it was created to do, which is to protect mom and baby in the presence of a threat. And it might not, the doctor might not be a threat, but your brain interprets it the same way as a predator in the wild. If you don't feel safe and comfortable around someone's presence, it doesn't matter how qualified they are or how important they are. If they make you feel unsafe or uncomfortable, your brain interprets it as a threat.
So what are the things that women experience when they're giving birth at home, though, that they just think, oh, this was so much better than when I gave birth in a hospital? Like what sorts of positives are there to having home birth?
So at a home birth, you're in your natural environment and you're comfortable and you don't have interruptions. You can set whatever kind of environment you want, low lights, you can, and you control the environment.
You can eat
outside. Yeah.
Really?
you control it.
Why are we told that we're not allowed to eat? Why are we told we're not allowed to eat during labor, though, in a hospital?
Would you starve yourself if you had to run a marathon?
Heck no!
No, you'd be eating carbs and spaghetti. You'd be fueling. Like, food is energy. Women need fuel and labor. Now, in active labor, most women aren't hungry. But if you have a long labor, you better be eating and nourishing your body. You better be drinking electrolytes. You better be doing something to help. And you don't know if your labor is going to be 30 hours or 3 hours. So I tell women, eat and sleep. If you feel like it, do it. The studies that led to the decisions to restrict food and drink to women in labor are so outdated. They're based on anesthesia practices from the 40s.
What?
The actual true risk of a woman aspirating in surgery, which means you have to be put under. So not general, you know, like not epidural anesthesia, but full anesthesia, you're out. And aspirating and dying is like 0.0004%. It's so, like, they actually changed those recommendations. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology years ago said, okay, we're revising this. We're no longer going to restrict eating and drinking for low-risk moms in labor. We all said, yay. And hospitals said, okay, we'll change our policies in like 10 or 20 years.
Oh my gosh.
So it takes on average 20 years to change a hospital policy once new evidence comes out. And that's why I recommend women, you have to get educated. You have to get informed. You have to learn how to advocate for yourself, because your doctor and your hospital are not necessarily guaranteed to be practicing based on evidence-based, up-to-date research.
But that's what the doula does, right? If you bring a doula to a hospital birth, like they're kind of, I call them the baby bouncer. Like you guys tell the doctor, like, hey, she's going to have a chicken leg if she wants or whatever.
So a doula supports the woman in physiological birth, but they don't boss around the doctors.
Oh. That's for sure. See, I haven't done any of this. You're teaching me. Now, so much of my audience are moms, so they'll know. They'll be like, Alex.
I mean, a doula can advocate, but when I serve women in hospitals and I have doula clients at home and in hospitals, I'm there to support mom and remind her, these are your rights. These are your choices. Do you want time to discuss this? I help her find her own voice. I'm not there to take over and start bossing people around. That's not my job. My job is to support mom and her partner to have an empowered birth experience and remind them you have choices, you have options. Is this what you want? Making sure they understand what they're consenting to or not, and protecting her environment. Because like I said, hospital birth, the environment just does not, you know, is not conductive to natural physiological birth. And so making sure I go in, first thing I do, turn off the lights. You don't have to have the light, fluorescent lights on. You can turn them off. You can bring little electronic candles. You can bring twinkly lights. You can play music. You can bring aromatherapy. You can make it like a home if you want, and whisper, make sure you're whispering when, you know, visitors are coming in so that they, oh, it's nice. And, you know, the nurse is coming. They're like, oh, it's really nice in here. Just want to stay in here. Like that's when you know.
Yeah.
Now this is an environment that's more conducive, not ideal, but more conducive. In a home birth, You have the familiarity of your home. You have freedom of movement. I love going up and down the stairs in birth, which isn't typically an option in a hospital for liability reasons. But my second birth was asynclitic. She was asynclitic, which means her head is like angled toward my hip. We're not a great, not at all a good position. And in most hospitals, it would end in a cesarean. But at home, I was able to chug up and down the stairs and bring a lot of movement into my hips. And I basically shimmied her down and out.
Whoa.
But it was hard work. So you also have the benefit of your natural endorphins, which are natural pain blocking endorphins like opioids. They block pain receptors. And you have more of a free flow of those in a nurturing, safe, familiar environment like the home, where you're able to fully let go and like sink in deep to into labor land. And those hormones of oxytocin and endorphins really are so powerful. I think they're more powerful. In fact, studies have shown they're more powerful than drugs you might get in a hospital, or even like if you took cocaine, the high you get from cocaine, the high you get in birth is greater. It releases more pain blocking and oxytocin hormones in your brain than you would get if you took crack. And
okay,
so
that's
that
crazy.
Is real.
Now a bunch of cokeheads are going to be like, I got to get pregnant.
I mean, this is why women say, like, I am addicted to birth. I want to have another baby. And that's possible. Like, you don't have to get done with your birth and be like, I am never having another. And you might like say, oh God, I'm so thankful that's over. Like, there's a relief that, oh, that hard work, that labor, that toil, I did it, it's over. But that birth high gets you so addicted. And it's not just mom that gets it. Everybody in the room that witnesses a physiological birth, an unmedicated birth, gets their own release of oxytocin to a lesser degree. And that's why we call it, like, you know, you're addicted, you're an addict, you have the birth high.
Well, I've never heard that before. Let me tell you, this is the first time I'm ever hearing that there are women that are addicted to giving birth. That's really mind-blowing to me. What is the craziest thing that a woman, or just funniest or weirdest thing that, like, a woman wanted to do at a home birth you were working?
Ooh, that's a good question. So I had one client that I'm thinking of. She was having a long labor, and one thing she did that really I thought was brilliant, it was a home birth, and her husband had one of those exercise bars, like in the door, you know, like in the frame of the door where you do pull-ups. And she was having a hard time. Like, that baby was, it was really strong contractions. She was in a great mindset. It was just taking a long time and it was really hard. So at one point I took a scarf or rebozo, which is a traditional cloth that they use for women in labor in traditional cultures. And there's a lot of things you can do with this cloth to help facilitate that baby turning and rotating, coming down. So what we did was I wrapped it around this bar. She grabbed it like this and she hung down and like squatted. And I'm telling you, that baby came out 5 minutes later. It was amazing.
Whoa.
there's something in this physiological response of pulling down and hanging that, like, your body just like pushes that baby down.
Right.
And we try to facilitate this in hospitals with the birth bar, but it's not the same. You really got to be like
bouncing
pulling
off
down and squatting. And they do that in indigenous cultures. If you look back and see, like, how do women birth in, you know, historically throughout society, cultures, a lot of women will like get a tree branch and like a rope and hang from it, or squat, or like hold on to their partner and squat. And you see this type of physiological, like, natural instinctual positioning. When women are told what to do, we're told get in this position or get in that position or make this noise or push like this or hold your breath.
Right.
We do things intuitively. And for her, it really effectively brought that baby down real fast. And she was grunting and she was, it was just so beautiful to witness, like, this power.
Right.
And to see how effective it was too. I was like, wow, I got to remember that one.
How can men be a healthy part of the birthing process?
Great question. I have a whole class for men in my e-course where I teach men how to support their partner in physiological birth. Number one, support her intuition, support her instincts. If she says, I really feel like home birth or birth center is the right choice, trust her, because she knows what's best for her and her baby. Intuitively, she knows where is the safest place for her to birth. And if you're uncomfortable with that, like my husband was in the beginning, do your research, watch documentaries like The Business of Being Born, read Ina May's Guide to Childbirth, understand how her body was created and designed for birth, and support her in her divine ability to do what she was created to do. And just feed her confidence constantly. Don't ever take withdrawals and make her doubt or question her ability to birth. I think that's probably number one. It's just supporting her in whatever she feels best. And then in labor, hands-on, learn how to do a hip squeeze, rub, massage. Here's what I say. The same hormones that get the baby in, get the baby out. So if you know your woman, like as a man, you can do things that make her feel calm and relaxed and in the mood. Those same hormones of oxytocin are going to help labor progress smoothly, effectively, and safely. If you're present, you're with her in the moment, you're physically touching her, if she likes that, if that helps her, some women don't like it, but being physically present and also showing up with masculine energy, which is strong, stable, secure.
Heck yeah.
It's like the bowl that holds the water. Like women are the water. We splash, we moan, we groan, we move, we cry, we laugh. We're all over the place in labor. And that's okay. You're not supposed to be, we're not robots. Like it's going to be intense. You might want to cry. You might have to let out an emotional, like spill everything out, let out all your fears, let out all the crazy, let out everything out. The man shows up and says, I'm here for you. You're safe. We're going to do this together. I'm supporting you. That strong, unwavering, present in the moment. That's the kind of energy that's going to support her in labor the best.
On your Instagram, Pain Free Birth, you talk a lot about having an ecstatic birth with God. What does that mean?
So that refers to the hormones that happen that come into play in a physiological, unmedicated birth that most women have never heard of or learned about. And we just think birth is painful. That's the way it is. But then when you learn about what your body is designed to do, and how your body is designed to release oxytocin and endorphins at peak levels, not just like the birth high after the baby's born, but even in labor, birth can be joyful and ecstatic. In fact, in my first birth, I was like 8 centimeters. And in my brain, I kept thinking, it's going to get worse. Like, I mean, it's working now. I'm not in pain. This is working. I was like, it's going good, but it's going to get worse. I kept thinking it's going to get worse. When I finally realized, there's this moment in my birth when I realized it's working, and it's not painful. Everything I prayed for is happening. And I was in the middle of active labor, going into transition most likely. And I start laughing because those endorphins and that oxytocin, I got like a surge of them. I could feel it. I was like, I'm having fun. And I literally said that out loud. I thought I wouldn't believe it later. But I was laughing at 8 centimeters. And I have other women tell me all the time, I was laughing and making jokes. And the nurses were like dumbfounded because she's 9 centimeters or she's pushing and they're laughing and in joy. And not everyone's laughing, but you have these peak moments of is what could be considered like a high, but it's from all the natural hormones and chemicals your body is releasing in a natural birth that are designed to not only block pain, but create euphoria and ecstasy and bond moms and babies together so that it's a joyful experience when you're bringing your baby into this world. It shouldn't have to be traumatic and scary. It can be joyful and ecstatic.
On your materials, you also talk about being connected to a source. What source are you talking about?
So for me, that source is God. For someone else, it may be something else. It may be that innate power within them. I connect to God and the Holy Spirit in my births. I'm in constant communication with them. You know, that source of energy, that life, all humans are connected to a life source. You know, we're not just out there as robots. We're energetic beings. We're spiritual beings. And birth is a deeply spiritual experience. And I think when we view it as that, we can begin to meet our spiritual needs. We can begin to become aware of what's really going on. If I'm scared, what do I need to hear? What kind of support do I need? What is it I'm fighting, trying to control something? Like, how do I surrender? How do I tap into like a strength that's deeper than my own? And when we encounter birth as something we're physically capable of doing, it becomes a very spiritual, transformational experience. And when we have a source or God or whoever, you know, whatever you consider that higher power to be, when we can acknowledge that and connect to it, it makes birth an incredibly spiritual, fulfilling, transformational experience that really like launches women into motherhood. It's like a rite of passage, I believe, for women, that birth is designed to be this empowering rite of passage. And we should never take that away from a woman. And often we see it sabotaged, but the potential for transformation is so ripe in birth. And I want every woman to have the opportunity to experience that for herself.
You've said that during labor, you experienced flashes of guidance and visuals of what to do next. You know, whether that was changing your position in labor or activities that you think you should be doing in the process of labor. What did those flashes look like and where do you think they came from quickly?
So it was just in my imagination. I would see a picture of me going up and down the stairs, or I would ask this question like, okay, what's next? And I'd feel this big surge and I'd know, God, it's time to get in the tub. And I was just connected to God. And I would see those pictures in my head. And I felt like he was showing me things, either God, Holy Spirit, or my own intuition, because we're one with him, right? He lives inside of us. So it's hard to separate it out. But I believe it was spiritual guidance where I would see or have a knowledge of something I had to do.
If a woman wants to take your e-course, what steps does she go to? Where can she find you? Where can she learn more about having a pain-free birth with you?
So painfreebirth.com is my website, and I've got the e-course on there and a postpartum bliss e-course where I talk about experiencing bliss in the postpartum, just like in labor. We have those same hormones that facilitate bonding and breastfeeding, even in the postpartum season. And I share about how to avoid postpartum depression and how to really experience birth and postpartum the way that God designed your body to function, to operate. And so you can go to painfreebirth.com, or you can find me on Instagram at painfreebirth. And I have lots of resources there. I have a free download. You can download a partner's cheat sheet, which you can hand to your partner and say, here, say these things in labor to me or remind me of this at this stage. It has a whole like breakdown of first stage, second stage, and pushing. And I get into a whole module on how to push physiologically. Like I said, most women are taught hold your breath and force push it out for hours on end. I teach women physiological pushing, where you're using breath to push baby down, which is a powerful tool, like the Ruach breath of God. It's something he gave us to use. Our uterus is designed to push that baby out. So I teach women, most women who take my course push for 15, 20 minutes, sometimes 40 minutes, but they do it naturally, usually without tearing or minimal tearing. So I teach you basically how your body was designed to birth and how you can partner with God and how you can partner with your body to have an empowering, positive birth experience. It may be pain-free. You may experience some pain. I don't obviously can't guarantee or promise pain-free birth to anyone, but I teach you the basic building blocks of what physiological birth is and how your body is designed to birth, which is the basis of pain-free birth. So the women who take my course say, even if their birth wasn't pain-free, they say, I felt so confident, I felt so empowered. And they walk away from birth feeling not like the power was taken from them, but like they owned that experience, which is really what I want women to experience, or have at least the opportunity to. Even if you have interventions and you need medical intervention, there's nothing wrong with that. You can still keep your power. You can still advocate for yourself. You can still stay confident and firm in how, what you believe or what you need in birth, and have an empowering birth experience, even if it didn't go perfectly. So it's not about like, hey, I did it unmedicated, I get a trophy. No, it's about, were you in charge? Were you empowered? Were you supported? That's what I want to know. So they can find me painfreebirth.com or painfreebirth on Instagram. And I've got freebies in the link in my bio, and you can find me that way.
Well, I got to say, Karen, for someone that's never had kids yet, I find your Instagram to be one of my favorite accounts. It is fascinating. I love the videos of women giving birth at home, their birth stories, your tips, your reels are incredible. Like, I mean, absolutely one of my favorite accounts, even as someone who doesn't have kids yet. So I know that Cutservatives, my audience, the people that listen to the show, are going to love you whether they have had kids or not. So thank you so much for coming on The Spillover.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor.
I'm not a momservative yet, so I have no idea if what Karen Welton believes sounds like nonsense or a game changer for you moms. I think this episode will be so interesting to set up a discussion with girlfriends and female family members in your life. Do you think that pain-free birth is some kind of mystical new age voodoo mama juju, or could embracing the birthing techniques that Karen teaches transcend the art of giving birth in a way that impacts generations to come? I'm not personally sure, but I know one thing. She's a guest on The Spillover that makes you think and challenges you, and those are some of my favorite interviews to do. If you like this episode too, please make sure you leave a 5-star review and subscribe to The Spillover. Share your thoughts on the episode. Tell all your moms. Friends to listen to this, ask what they think. If you disagree, that's okay. Still leave 5 stars, and then, you know, you can roast her and I don't know. I'm sure she can handle it. New episodes of The Spillover come out every Thursday at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or you can watch the episode live on the Poplitics YouTube channel and participate in the chat. It's always super fun. I'm Alex Clark, and this is The Spillover. Love you, mean it. Bye.